Secretary General of Hezbollah, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, is delivering a speech. Let's go in and take a listen to what he's saying.
And we pray the Fatiha for the martyrs of the resistance.
In these days, at every year, at this time, we meet. We meet under the flag and the theme of the martyrs on the day which Hezbollah has chosen. Ever since the beginning, we chose this as a day for the martyrs. A day for the martyrs of Hezbollah. Of course, all components of the resistance, all of the resistance movements, all of the peoples of resistance in the region, all of them have their martyrs, martyrs who belong to a specific movement, and it is a natural right for us to commemorate a day for the memory of the martyrs. And actually, this day, commemorating this day, is compensating for the annual anniversary of every martyr, as we witnessed before. And we hope, God willing, that the day will come whereby in Lebanon there will be a day for the martyr of the nation. All of the martyrs, all of the resistance movements, all of the resistance heroes from the army, the security forces, the political forces, all the martyrs, the people of Lebanon, we hope that they will come whereby this will be a national celebration. At the beginning and before I speak about the martyr of Hezbollah, I must bow down in appreciation and respect to all of our martyrs in the rest of the resistance movements, the resistance factions. We appreciate their efforts and their sacrifices. We appreciate their giving, and we appreciate their real participation in liberating Lebanon and in defending Lebanon and in achieving all of the goals which we were able to achieve until now. And as usual, I would like to point out to the fact that I will speak, first of all, I will refer to the martyrs on this occasion of Martyrs Day and about the resistance. This is one subject of my speech, and another subject will be about the Lebanese internal situation, and I will also refer to the regional situation. On this day, Martyrs Day, of course, we are celebrating the martyrs of Hezbollah, the leaders such as Sayyid Abbas al-Musawi, the former Hezbollah Secretary General, and Sheikh Raghib Harb, and Imad Mughniyeh, the former Hezbollah military commander, and also other leaders of this Islamic resistance, the great martyr fighters, those who made their pledge was to be martyrs. This began with the martyr Ahmad Qasir, and also other martyrs, mujahideen, resistance fighters, men, women, children, young, old. We are celebrating this gathering, and thousands, there are over thousands of martyrs, martyrs who believed in this direction, and it was part of this nation and this people. These people, they took the concerns of the Ummah and they chose the right direction, and these martyrs gave on the road which they believed in. They gave and sacrificed for the sake of this cause. They gave all of this honor. Of course,
selecting this day, the 11th of the 11th, 11th of November, the occasion is the martyr operation committed by the martyr Ahmad Qasir in the city of Tyre. This operation, which targeted a Israeli military commander in Tyre. This operation until today is still unique amongst all of the other resistance operations. And until today, this is the biggest operation and the most important operation in the history of the Arab-Israeli conflict because of the magnitude of the losses of the enemy by one resistance fighter at one single moment. And the enemy himself confessed that now they speak about 120, 130, 140. Let me be cautious and say the enemy confessed that over 100 Israeli military officers and soldiers were killed, and high-ranking generals were also amongst those who were killed. The magnitude of the losses of the enemy. Now, when it comes to the moral losses, the psychological losses, the results, the moral results, the psychological results, and the political results on the enemy and results on us, how it affected us here were great. There were big results. And this operation showed that the enemy awaited defeat, that defeat was the destiny of the enemy. I always remember the face of Sharon, the face of despair, when he was standing in Tyre at that time. This operation is also a very, very important operation in the history of resistance. It is the first martyrdom operation in the history of the Arab-Israeli conflict. When a martyr enters with a car full of explosives, enters into a military command center and blows himself up. So I would like to call this the martyr. Ahmad is the beginning of the martyrs. And also, he deserves the title, the Prince of the Martyrs, because the Prince is not someone who sits behind the front lines. He is the one who is at the beginning, sitting on the front lines of the martyrs, because he was sitting in the front rows, because he was the first person, he is hence the prince. This very early period of the operation, just a few months after the Israeli invasion of Lebanon, and some people in Lebanon and in the region believed that Lebanon had entered into the Israeli era forever, and that hence we must prepare ourselves to being in agreement in the atmosphere of this Israeli era. However, this operation by Ahmad Qasir said no. This is not the Israeli era. It is a different era. This is an era of resistance, an era of the martyrs, an era of victories. Brothers and sisters, this year, our brothers have chosen a title for Martyr Day. They called it the Day of Life. This is correct, 100%. It is the most correct naming. First of all, because the martyrs are alive. The martyrs are alive. I do not say this. God says this. God, who creates death and life, says that the martyrs are alive. He says, don't believe that those who were killed in God's cause as dead people, but they are alive with their God. They are with their God now. They are alive now as we speak. They are being rewarded by God. God is rewarding them. And they await the others, the other martyrs, the martyrs who are still with us now, who are still waiting their turn, living up to their pledge. They, of course, are in the minds of all of the martyrs who have already sacrificed. And as I said, the martyrs are awaiting the followers. And do not say that those who are killed in God's cause, do not name them as dead people. They are alive. And second of all, because they gave us life. They gave us life. What kind of life did they give us? Dignified life, an honored life. They gave our country, they gave our people, they gave our nation dignity and honor and sovereignty, security, liberation, and a feeling of confidence and a feeling of being reassured of the future. This is the real life which any human being looks forward to. This is the school. This is the school of Islam, which says that life is different, which says that life will be better by the sacrifices. Meaning, after 1982, when the Zionists occupied half of Lebanon and when they wanted to practice hegemony over Lebanon, all of Lebanon, and their armed carriers, their armor and their vehicles went here and there, and they even entered into Lebanon's shores at every angle, if the Lebanese would have been satisfied to live and to eat and drink in the midst of this, in the midst of occupation, if they had accepted their dignity to be violated and their youngsters to be harmed, if they had accepted their sovereignty to be incomplete, if they had accepted their fate to be unknown, this means that they would have accepted a life of humiliation, of bowing down to the enemy. Could we describe this as real life? No, this is death in another way. So these martyrs created life with God's will. God made this possible. God made a moral life, a real human life. God made reasons behind such a life, behind living such a life. And so jihad and martyrdom and the will and the perseverance of resistance brought about this dignified life for all of us. These martyrs, my dear brothers and sisters, they, and as we speak about them, they are the result of belief in God and belief in Judgment Day. They are the result of knowledge. The knowledge of the goal, the knowledge of the best way to achieve our goals, the knowledge of knowing who the friend is, who the enemy is, the place, the location. When a person walks on this direction, this is the best approach. When someone has a real vision, these people also are the people of determination, are the people of will, the people of courage. We all remember at the beginning of confrontation against the enemy, how the whole world stood with Israel. And we all remember how the morals were down. People didn't have a high morale, and everybody worked with despair. Despair was the atmosphere amongst the resistance fighters. And so from here we remember the roots of this meaning. Imam Ali, may peace be upon him, says, every individual in this resistance, I'd like to say every individual in the resistance still has this spirit of what Imam Ali said. Imam Ali, may peace be upon him, said that if I meet them by myself, if I meet the enemy by myself, and if they filled the whole world and I've confronted them by myself, I will confront them. This is the essence of resistance, the essence of resistance fighters in Lebanon. They never felt despair because they were a small number. They didn't feel despair because the enemy had a lot of numbers, because the enemy had a lot of numbers, because the enemy had a lot of support, because so many people stood with the enemy, because so many people relied on the enemy to achieve victory. No, every one of these resistance fighters stood and told the Zionists and said to the Zionists and to the Americans and to the multinational forces, they told them, if I confront you by myself and if you fill the whole world with your numbers, I will never feel fear. These are the people of determination, of love, people who are enthusiastic, people who are committed to walking on their direction. Imam Ali, may peace be upon him, says, I miss my God. I am anxious to meet my God. And I am anxious to fulfill the path of God. These are the people who miss meeting their God, who are very anxious to meet with their God. And so they were, and they still look into the essence of this. They look into the enemy. They look to the end. This meaning also can explain to us very precisely the real secret behind the victory which was achieved in the July 2006 war. And this weapon, nor the tactics, nor the planning, nor the administration, the management, nor anything else, nothing would have enabled Lebanon or the resistance to achieve victory were it not for these fighters, for these men who stood solidly on the ground, who never felt fear, who never backed down, who never weakened, who never ran away, who never fled. And so, this is the school of the martyrs of resistance. And for this reason, today we are living this environment in Lebanon. We are living a state of comfort, of reassurance, resting assured for the first time in the history of Lebanon, ever since the establishment of a Zionist entity which took over Palestine, which stole Palestine in 1948. For the first time we are living such a state, such a situation, a relaxed situation. It is not easy to live in a country where we have a brutal neighbor, a neighbor who plays tricks. How can we rest assured when we have such a neighbor? Rest assured for our people, for the dignity of our people, for the future of our people, when we have a racist, hostile entity as a neighbor. Today, for the first time, Lebanon, and southern Lebanon specifically, is feeling relieved, is living a state of calm, resting assured, confident. Weeks ago, I was reading a text for Imam Musa Sadr. May God bring him back to us. And in these days, we, all of us who love Imam Musa Sadr, we are living a unique period. We are going through a unique period. We hope that the efforts being pursued will lead to Imam Musa Sadr coming back to us, God willing. I was reading a text for Imam Musa Sadr recently, a text, something he said in a private meeting in 1977, before the Israeli invasion in 1978. This was a private meeting. He was saying the main point. He says that it's very unfortunate what is going on in southern Lebanon to the people of southern Lebanon. Southern Lebanon has become a place subject to strikes, to attacks by the Israelis, destruction time and again. a place where people are being displaced. Southern Lebanon, which is not feeling any security. And then Imam Musa Sadr goes on and says, with a broken heart, he says, Lebanon is weak, southern Lebanon is weak. Because Lebanon, and because southern Lebanon, because we are all weak, and hence the enemy can do what it wants. The enemy can assault and attack whenever it wants. He speaks, as I said, with a heart of sorrow. And he says that many people are not concerned with what is going on in Lebanon. They're not listening to the calls, to the voices from South Lebanon. When I read these words from Imam Musa Sadr, I said to myself, Imam Musa, when you come back, God willing, you will be happy with your people. You will be proud of your students, of your people. You will be proud of those who walked on your direction. You will be proud of all of your friends and allies. You will be proud of the resistance which you laid the foundations for, which you sacrificed for. You sacrificed for the sake of resistance to be established in Lebanon and in South Lebanon. South Lebanon, Imam Musa Sadr, South Lebanon today is strong, is secure, is confident, is standing solidly. And South Lebanon is no longer a place where people can attack whenever they want. South Lebanon is now present clearly in the regional equation. Today, and from here I'd like to go into the political situation. Yes, when it comes to the possibility of a new Israeli war on Lebanon, and despite everything we hear some analysis, we read some articles, but I think this is all psychological warfare. We still believe that the Israelis will not launch a war. We believe this is a remote possibility that a new war will be launched against Lebanon, regardless of the developments in the region and the regional situation, which I will refer to as well. So if there is not a plan to wage a war on the regional level, we don't believe that there will be a plan to launch a war on Lebanon directly. The reason behind this is not because Israel is good, or not because America doesn't want a war, not because the international community doesn't want a war, not because of the ethics of anyone, not because anybody has been transformed from evil to good. The reason behind this is that Lebanon is no longer weak. This is why we don't believe that there will be a new war on Lebanon, because Lebanon has become a strong country, because Lebanon, with its army, with its people, and with its resistance, Lebanon has become capable of defending itself and of defeating the attacker, the aggressor. Even more than this, Lebanon has become a country which can change, which can turn the tables against anyone who attacks it, and can transform the threat into a real opportunity. Of course, when this strength weakens, may God forbid, when this strength is disabled, yes, then Israel could reconsider attacking Lebanon or launching a new war in Lebanon or controlling Lebanon. However, as long as this faith, as this vision, as long as this will exists, and as long as this golden equation of army, resistance, and people exists, Israel will be incapable of launching a new war. And if the day comes whereby Israel does launch a war, this will be a war of no choice, meaning the last adventure. Israel will have no choice, the last adventure in the life of this entity. Of course, here I would like to stress on the following. At the time where, on the analytical level, I don't believe that there will be an Israeli war on Lebanon, regardless of the events in the region, as I said. This does not mean, however, that we must sleep and turn a blind eye. I would like to assure you that this resistance which we belong to, this resistance has never slept. Ever since 1982, ever since Ahmad Qasir, we have never slept until the year 2000, when the big victory was achieved in Lebanon on 25th of May. On the 26th of May, the year 2000, this resistance has never slept. This resistance was always awake, was always working, preparing itself, because this resistance knows that its people and this country are neighbors of such an enemy. In 2006, at the end of 2006 until today, this resistance has never slept. And I'll go back also to a quote for Imam Ali, may peace be upon him. He says that the brother of the war is being awake all the time. Whoever has a hostile neighbor, whoever is still in a state of war, even those who say that Lebanon is in a calm which Israel doesn't recognize, this means that there is a state of war. Although Resolution 1701, which is still being referred to today, Israel has not reached a ceasefire. There's a cessation of hostilities, according to 1701. The brother of the war is staying awake. We stay awake and we keep our eyes open. The resistance in Lebanon is always awake, is always monitoring what is going on. And Imam Ali, may peace be upon him, says, whoever sleeps, even if some people in Lebanon sleep, are the Israelis sleeping? The Israelis, ever since 2006, until today, the Israelis are preparing and holding drills and getting weapons and holding maneuvers. We have an enemy who has never slept, and whoever sleeps, on the other hand, the enemy will not sleep, and whoever leaves jihad will always be targeted, will be an easy prey. I'd like to tell those, I'd like to say to those people who feel despair in their hearts, but in their political rhetoric they don't show this despair. When you demand of our people, when you demand of our resistance, when you demand of our resistance to put down their weapons, to turn over their arms, this means you are demanding us to be an easy prey, to be an easy prey, to be people who are humiliated, people who have never learned their lessons, people who turn over the dignity of their people and their nation to the ugliest enemy in history, which is Israel. And so, we, on Martyr Day, on the Day of Martyrs, we call for holding on to resistance, holding on to the army, holding on to the popular will, because this is a strong element for us. This is one of our strengths. Now here, I'd like to speak about the internal Lebanese situation. Regarding the government has proven until now that it is a government of diversity, the Lebanese government. It is a government of diversity whereby different political factions are represented. It is a government which represents a parliamentary majority and a popular majority, a real popular majority. It is a government of debate, a government of discussion, a government of dialogue. It is not a government of one opinion, nor is it a government of one faction or a comprehensive government, a government where the components discuss and then take a decision. They don't receive dictations from anyone. It doesn't receive dictations or orders from Dennis Ross, or Dennis Ross has resigned anyway. I was going to refer to someone else about 1559, Terry Rod Larson. So this government, anyway, doesn't receive signals or dictations from anyone. It is a real national government. This Lebanese government is called to make more efforts, to pursue more efforts, to make more achievements, to seriously engage and follow up all issues. and it must not listen to all the furor which we hear from here and there, because some want to make this government preoccupied in imaginary issues. It must not listen to these voices. This government must give a priority, complete priority to the concerns of the people, to the needs of the people, the daily needs, the economic, financial needs. There are very important issues for the government, such as the salaries, the public sector, the teachers, for example, issues regarding the gas and oil. These are very important issues for the government, and we are approaching the end of the year. We have the issue of electricity, health insurance, health care, administrative appointments, appointees. There are very sensitive matters. For example, the administrative positions, this means that the administrative bodies must be complete, able to make achievements. And this is a real problem we have now, this issue of the administrative appointments in the country. So completing this will lift a lot of burdens and take away a lot of difficulties for the people. We must quickly, of course, go ahead to fill in the province, to complete the provincial appointees of the of Baalbek, of Akkar, solve the situations of certain Lebanese cities. There are tens of thousands of people who are wanted back 10 years. Arrest warrants have been issued against them tens of years ago. There are simple issues as well which could be discussed and could be addressed, because this also lessens the burden on the security services, because the security services say we have 30,000-40,000 arrest warrants against people in one province. Most of these arrest warrants, of course, are about very trivial matters, and we can solve these issues very easily, trivial matters, and we could grant amnesty to some of these wanted people. Other steps were made, there were other achievements were made in the cabinet related to the, people can call it what they want, we call it those who have fled to Israel, those who have fled to the Israeli entity. There were many different explanations. We supported the proposal made to the cabinet by the parliament, and we believed that this was part of the understanding which was signed between us and the Free Patriotic Movement in year 2006, and we believe in our memorandum's understanding with other parties. However, and of course, the government is also concerned to quickly sign all the decrees and address this issue within the boundaries which were voted upon in the parliament. Of course, addressing this is a humanitarian issue as well. However, allow me to remind you, and some people might ask, why do you remind us all the time? I remind you of this subject because some people say these people fled to the Israeli entity because they feared they would be subject to massacres. Of course, on that day, some people didn't know what was going on. When the Israeli withdrawal occurred in May 25th, 2000, and so some people had to be reminded that on the 25th of May, the year 2000, nobody was killed. None of those people were killed. The liberation occurred and nobody was killed. No one from the Lahad army. There were martyrs from the resistance. They were killed, but nobody, no civilian was killed. No massacres were committed against people of the Lahad army. There were no churches which were attacked, no places of worship which were attacked. The spies who were arrested were quickly handed over to the judiciary. And I believe that those who fled to Israel, of course, they had the right to flee because they had this vision at that time that they would be attacked or killed, in addition to the fact that some people knew what they had done, and so it was logical for them to flee. However, after they saw the very civilized way in which the spies were dealt with, how the resistance, with all of its components, and how the people of South Lebanon, those whose children were killed, those who were violated in the Khiam prison, how they dealt in a civilized manner with the spies and with the families, and how the Lebanese judiciary dealt with them. I think many of them then felt sorrow. They regretted the fact that they fled. However, I just wanted to remind some of those people that there were no massacres committed against anyone of the Lahad army, any Lebanese spy, and they must confront history. In 11 years, they have forgotten, and they're trying to change history. Of course, every time they try and change history, they try and fabricate the facts. So I wanted to remind you, because people are trying to change the facts, I just want to remind you that no spy was harmed when most of Lebanon was liberated. And when it comes to the government, we support this government, because this government is a government of diversity and a national government. And when it comes to the security situation, we call on everyone to preserve the security and stability in the country, because this is a condition for everything. Security is a precondition for a good economy, for political stability, for a good health. It's a precondition for everything. And in this perspective, I call on all the political sides and the media not to exaggerate the security incidents which are occurring in Lebanon or anywhere else. And I call on the media and on some politicians to verify all the facts before they make statements, because after the incident occurs, it is being discovered that the information is not based on true foundations, is not true. And within the same context, we must not resort to attacking the army, launching verbal accusations and attacks against the Lebanese army. The priority is not to attack, not to verbally accuse the army, because the Lebanese army is a guarantee for sovereignty and national unity and security. And all of the previous painful experiences which Lebanon and the people of Lebanon have been through, all of these experiences have shown us that everything can be divided in Lebanon, everything can be lost, but the Lebanese army is what saves us. If anybody wants to make a political argument, okay, let them argue against us, let them attack the government, the parliament, but let's leave the Lebanese army alone. Let's put it aside to preserve the army and preserve its national role and its reputation. Because if we attack the army, we are attacking the national unity. Also, within the internal situation, I'd like to refer to the following. When it comes to the financing or funding of the Hariri Tribunal, of course, we said this will be discussed in the cabinet. There is some new development, the development which occurred with the UNESCO. It's beneficial for the Lebanese and the Arab and world public opinion to be vigilant and focus on this point. The UNESCO is an international organization which is concerned with the cultural issue. And UNESCO, because there is no right for a veto in UNESCO, UNESCO has recognized the state of Palestine. What kind of Palestinian state? Not the Palestinian state from the river to the sea. No, a peace. It has recognized a peace of Palestine, 1967 territories. We're not sure if it's 1967. Palestinian territories in the area which a Palestinian state will be established according to the future negotiations. America was very angry because this cultural international organization gave the Palestinians part of their rights, not all of their rights, part of their rights. Because of this, America expressed its anger. It condemned the UNESCO, and hence America is condemning all those countries who voted for the Palestinians. And then it took a step. It stopped funding the UNESCO without any previous warning. Today, UNESCO announced it will freeze all of its programs until the end of year 2011. Here, I'd like to draw your attention. First of all, UNESCO is recognized internationally. It's an international organization. It was not formed during the Bush-Chirac era, nor was it formed in some legal maneuvering like the Hariri Tribunal. On the other hand, UNESCO, its work is continuing, and its efforts, all of its work, depends on the funding. And it was founded on fair grounds, on just grounds, and UNESCO must continue with its work. The American administration stops its funding, freezes its funding for UNESCO. Funding UNESCO, wasn't it an international commitment? Isn't this part of the international commitments of the American administration? Why can the American administration, why is it allowed for the American administration to abandon and to stop its international commitments at the time where Lebanon can't do this? If we assume that Lebanon has such a commitment, even in Lebanon, some people were vigilant that this affects the tribunal, and they said, they made some comments. However, most of the March 14 didn't comment on this. America has the right not just to stop its funding and destroy UNESCO, because UNESCO stood on the side of the Palestinian people. However, Lebanon doesn't have this right. And if Lebanon doesn't fund the tribunal, the unconstitutional, illegal tribunal, and we all know the CV and the life and the behavior of this tribunal, Feltman comes, the U.S. Assistant Secretary of State, after the Americans froze the funding of UNESCO, Jeffrey Feltman comes and threatens Lebanon with sanctions if it doesn't fund the tribunal. Anyway, this uncovers the true face of America and its allies in the world and in Lebanon. Now, in light of this scandal, Fouad Sinoura, the former Lebanese Prime Minister, provided an exit for the Americans to hold on to UNESCO. Now, you know, sometimes media is not precise. I want to read here what is said. Sinoura gave a solution which protects UNESCO from the American punishment. Sinoura called on the Arab League and the Arab heads of state and the Islamic countries and the Western countries, the friendly Western countries. He called on them to take the initiative and gather the money which the United States usually provides to UNESCO. And in this way, according to Sinoura, we can solve this matter. Meaning, now America, is it condemned, is it not condemned, can it be subject to sanctions? This is related to the world, to the people, the courage of the people and the issue of double standards. I don't want to speak about this. I want to speak here about what Sinoura proposed. Sinoura made an interesting proposal. Of course, why don't you resort to this with Najib Miati? Why don't you leave Miati alone, leave his cabinet alone, and why don't you call on the Arab League and the heads of state and the Arab leaders and the Islamic leaders and the Western countries? How much is it, $50-60 million? Why don't you call on them to fund the tribunal? It doesn't even need this. There is one Arab emir who can stop holding some parties in London and Paris, stop paying money for parties, and use this money for the tribunal. And let's stop this problem in the country. Let's put a stop to all of these accusations against Prime Minister Miati, because Miati is really believes in what he says. And let's stop these accusations. They say Lebanon is going to be isolated economically. So if you really love Lebanon, if you want to preserve Lebanon, if you want Lebanon to be secure, okay, we are people who are stubborn and you guys are open-minded and you people like dialogue. Why don't you present the same proposal, the proposal which you gave regarding the UNESCO, make the same proposal regarding the Hadidi Tribunal. Although UNESCO behaved fairly towards a country and the Hadidi Tribunal, on the other hand, is assaulting another people. However, this is an exit. This is a solution which you can propose. So you can leave Miati alone and let him do his job. Of course, today, the first chamber or the second chamber in the tribunal is discussing the issue of trials in absentia. I'm not going to go into this because we are dealing with this tribunal as if it doesn't exist, so I don't waste your time. The last point in the internal situation, before I speak about the regional situation, the last point is I'd like to give a piece of advice to all of the political groups or movements. Let's take care of our country, let's solve the crises in our country, let's address the issues of the country. We have a government, we have a parliament on the table of national dialogue, wherever you want. Let's come and give a priority and stop relying on the outside, on foreign sides. Stop relying on regional developments, because some people in Lebanon relied on the regional developments. In a previous speech, I spoke about 5 issues in 5 years, how people depended on 5 developments. Don't waste your breath. Don't waste your time. I'd like to tell those people who are delaying their action or delaying their steps, or those who are hoping or dreaming, who base their dreams on the fall of the regime of Bashar Assad in Syria, I'd like to tell them, put this aside, put this issue aside, and I'd like to tell them as well, this will fail. Relying on this will be a failure, just like the previous failures. Don't waste your time. Come back to Lebanon. Speak with the Lebanese. It's very strange. Some people speak about Lebanon comes first, except when it comes to their political steps. In their political steps, Lebanon comes last. Where is Lebanon first? If you believe in Lebanon first, on Lebanese capabilities, if you depend on the Lebanese minds, on the Lebanese will, on the Lebanese dialogue, Lebanese cooperation, if you depend on this, I give you a piece of advice. Stop relying on the outside. Of course, when it comes to the regional situation, I don't have time to speak about everything, but the most important issue over the past few days are the developments related to Iran and Syria, and the threats, the Israeli and American and Western threats, and reopening the Iranian nuclear issue. We witnessed over the past few days an escalation in the threats, and without any previous warning, we are hearing about the possibility of the Israeli enemy striking the Iranian nuclear facilities, and in the media we start hearing comments and we hear stances from people. The escalation has increased, and we're hearing more and more about this. Of course, the leadership in the Islamic Republic of Iran responded decisively and very clearly and strongly. And the clearest stance was what we heard yesterday from Ayatollah Khamenei, may God preserve him. And also, what he said is realistic, is the real situation, is the reality. Iran, with its army, with its people, with its unity, with its faith, with its determination, Iran cannot be afraid from any threats nor from any armies. And when the American armies came and occupied the whole region around Iran, when that happened, Iran was not afraid. Today, the American troops exist on the borders with Iran, Pakistan, Afghanistan, Iraq, Turkey, the Gulf, the countries of the Gulf, the waters of the Gulf. But despite this, Iran hasn't weakened. Its determination has not weakened. It did not resort to direct negotiations with the Americans. So, psychological warfare or armies, none of this can harm or touch the determination and the dignity of the Iranian leadership or the Iranian people. This is something clear. But let's speak now about the possibility of escalation. How can we understand what is going on? If we go back to the background, here I'd like to speak about Iran and Syria together. We must always remember that from now until the end of the year, about a period of about 1 month, there will be a big American withdrawal, an American withdrawal from Iraq. There's still a discussion, will 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, 500 Americans remain, under what conditions? This is something else. However, there is no doubt what is happening is an American withdrawal and a big defeat for the American project. Now, in the year 2000, people said the resistance in Lebanon didn't achieve victory. The Israelis withdrew. The resistance didn't achieve victory. There's an agreement under the table. And now, the same thing will happen now. Some people will say America wanted to withdraw. This is not a defeat for America. America put up with all of its financial losses and economic losses, and this big collapse in America's economy, in light of all this, will America withdraw from Iraq? Of course not. America, which is leaving Iraq, is defeated. It's defeated in Iraq. And America must do something in the midst of this. Any country which withdraws, some withdraw under fire, the real fire. America now cannot withdraw under military fire. America must create smoke, must make an ambiguous situation. It must withdraw under political fire, meaning a war in the region and an assault on Iran, an attack on Syria, and the whole world and the whole region and all the peoples of the region will focus on such expectations, such an event. And so the American withdrawal and the American defeat will then become a natural, a normal piece of news, a news which is at the back, not a very important headline. So the issue is that then the war will become a headline and not the American withdrawal. Of course, everyone is saying we must focus the spotlight on this defeat and the American withdrawal because it has a strategic result, a strategic effect on every angle, moral, military, political, on every angle in our region. So it's very natural as well for the American administration at this time, it's very natural for this American administration to punish the countries who played a role in defeating America and the American project. And nobody disagrees. We all agree that the two countries which stood against the American occupation of Iraq, those who were against the American occupation and supported the Iraqi people and the Iraqi resistance, and those who supported the Iraqi perseverance, and those countries who didn't give in to the conditions of Colin Powell or his predecessors, these two countries are Iran and Syria. At the time of defeat and American failure, America wants to tell Iran and Syria, don't be happy, don't be happy, don't believe that you made an achievement, because you'll remain under pressure, you'll remain under threats. The stick will always be in your face. This is something natural for America to do. Imagine the American administration will leave Iraq and recognize and confess that it has been defeated. Of course, all the Republicans in America are saying it's a big defeat. Let's speak now about the Obama administration. Then Iran and Syria and the people of the region and all those who support the Iraqi people and the Iraqi resistance to celebrate this big victory. So this is something behind this talk of war against Iran and behind what is going on against Syria. Another issue is that the changes and developments we've been witnessed in our region, which we saw in our region, of course, some intellectuals and some political analysts disagree on this matter about the understanding and how to read what is going on in our region. However, regardless of all of these points of view, there is no doubt that the fall of Zain al-Abidin bin Ali in Tunisia is a loss for the American and Western presence in our region. The new regime in Tunisia, what will it do? This is something for the future. However, for the time being, it's a loss for America. The fall of Gaddafi also is a loss for the Americans. The fall of Hosni Mubarak is the biggest loss, the big, greater loss for America and Israel. So there are transformations in the region which are not in the interest of the Americans and the Israelis. Now, can the Americans rearrange the situation and bring it back to their interest? That's something else. However, when it comes to the developments in the region, it is very clear that the resistance axis, which rejects Israel and hegemony, this axis is increasing and gaining strength, and this will allow Iran and Syria to get new allies, new supporters, new members in this axis, in this group. And this could mean more influence, more presence, more efficiency. So in order to compensate for this American loss in Egypt, in Tunisia, in Libya, and especially in Egypt, in order to compensate, they must put Iran and Syria on the defensive. They must make Iran and Syria preoccupied in their security, in their economy, preoccupied with themselves. This is another matter. The fourth point, and the last point in this issue, America wants Iran and Syria to bow down. They want to drag Iran into direct negotiations with the United States. Iran never rejected sitting down with the Americans on a multilateral table. However, when it comes to bilateral talks, Iran always rejected this and still does. What the Americans want is to drag Iran to the table of bilateral negotiations. They want to drag Syria to accept what the Syrians didn't accept before. This is the real goal. Now, in light of all this, if we add the facts related now to the financial and economic situation in Europe, Italy is following in the footsteps of Greece. Portugal is following the footsteps of Italy. Countries are following in the footsteps of each other. The head of the International Monetary Fund, yesterday she spoke very clearly and said the world economy is in danger. The financial economic situation in America is catastrophic and very difficult. Imagine, my brothers and sisters, that when one of the Republican presidential candidates, because now the Republican presidential candidates are competing against one another. One of these Republican candidates said the following. He must look for political popular slogans, and he must demand the Israeli support. However, what he said is he wanted to put a stop to all foreign assistance, including assistance to Israel. This means this is a popular small slogan inside America, and it also points out the difficulty of the American financial situation. So when they usually demand support from the lobby, now we have some who are pointing out to stopping foreign aid, including to Israel. Now we have Iran, which is strong. Iran, which has a unique leader. Iran, which will respond very strongly to any threat. Who has the courage to wage a war against Iran? Who has the courage to wage a war against Iran now in such a situation? Today, anyway, the American Secretary of Defense made clear statements. He started to say that any military action will lead to tension in the region. It will put us in danger in the Gulf. We don't know where the region will reach, where we'll go. So they must understand very well that the war on Iran and that a war on Syria will not remain in Iran and in Syria. Such a war will spread out to the whole region. And these are real calculations. We are not threatening, nor is anyone else. Let's put all the threats aside. We don't want to take preemptive stances. This is reality. Any war will spread to the whole region.
And now, more than any time before, the Arab and Islamic countries and the Arab governments and the Islamic governments and the Arab people and Islamic people must take a stance. Take a look at this. Israel, which has nuclear warheads, military nuclear warheads, is calling on the world to pressure Iran and is threatening Iran, is threatening to strike Iran's peaceful nuclear facilities. Why is Israel behaving in this arrogant way? It's because Israel feels the weakness of the other side, feels that there are divisions. We'd like to tell them that relying on weakness on our part is a mistake. This era of weakness and backing down on our part, backing down against the Israeli enemy, on backing down against the American assault, this era has ended. This era is the era of faith, knowledge, love, determination, will. Brothers and sisters, today, on Martyrs' Day, we stress that ever since the beginning of the martyrdom operations, ever since the martyr Ahmad Qasid, ever since the martyrdom operation which struck the Israelis in Tyre, ever since that time until today and to the future, we have entered the era of victories, the era of defeat has ended. All we have to do is to preserve the blood of the martyrs, the will of the martyrs, and we must continue to walk on the path of the martyrs. Together, we will do this. We will accomplish this for the sake of the martyrs. We owe it to the martyrs. We will always owe it to them until we follow them. We follow on their footsteps. We are the ones who have stood solidly in the midst of all the difficulties, in front of all challenges. And I'd like to tell you, despite all the threats which we are now hearing about in the region, today the internal and regional and international situation is in the interests of the people of the region as in the interests of the resistance axis. Our situation, the situation of the resistance axis, is the best, better than it was ever before. I'm not overreacting, I'm not exaggerating. On all levels, it's the best situation for the resistance axis. If you go back to 1982, look at what the situation was back then. Even go back to 2006, what was the situation like in 2006? However, despite it, at that time, we achieved victory in 1982 and in 2006. And in all different periods, as long as we are people of faith and people of knowledge and people of love and people of determination, as long as we are such a people, we will achieve victory, God willing. May God bless you, and assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Live. Okay, you're listening to Hezbollah Secretary General Seyed Hassan Nasrallah.